He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And it is indeed. And this week's show, I'm going to start off. We haven't not talked about recalls recently. There hasn't been a lot of, in my opinion, issues that require discussing it on a show like this. But the one that's really interesting me is this Toyota recall on the BZ4X vehicle. It's an electric car. And the recall is over wheels that can fall off. This is, I don't understand how wheels on electric cars would be any more likely to fall off than wheels on any other cars produced, but this is apparently what is possible, what can possibly happen. I don't think it has in this particular recall. And Toyota's got a very interesting, quite comprehensive recall compensation program for the owners, any owners who have already purchased this car and might be driving them around. Apparently only 260 vehicles in the U.S. have been had been sold as of the time this article was written, which is nothing in comparison to what goes on monthly with many of our other brands of vehicles, electric and fossil fuel included. I'm not going to dwell on it any more than other than to say it intrigues me that wheels can, there can be a recall on something like wheels falling off. And the remedy, that the remedy has not been figured out, at least as far as this article's, at the time this article was written, has been able to be figured out by Toyota, is even more intriguing.
Can I ask you a question about...
anybody who is listening to the show happens to have a Toyota electric BZ4X, and you have not heard about this recall, you should check with your dealer. But if you're really happy with the car, I wouldn't plan on wanting them to repurchase it, which is the ultimate compensation offer that Toyota has out on it.
So I thought recalls I thought recalls didn't happen until there were incidents.
No, well, somehow they figured out that this is a problem. So somewhere in the world, if not in the U.S., there may have been a vehicle with a wheel that fell off, or maybe in some testing after the car had been put on the market. But usually they don't put the cars on the market until they've got them pretty well vetted out. So this is a very significant recall, because you don't want to have wheels falling off while you're going around a corner or whatever you're doing driving a car. So why they can't figure out that your bolts have to be tightened or they put lock nuts on them or whatever, Jay can jump in if you want, Jay. I don't know, but that's all I want to talk about.
I'm not aware of the problem, and I just have a problem even remembering the name of the car, and you just mentioned it three times, and I still cannot, for the life of me, remember if it's B4X. I don't know. I don't understand that.
I agree. That's
stupid.
That's
a whole other problem.
I think this is happening in a number of electric cars, isn't it? The letters and numbers are being put on. What is it? Well, you've got the Ioniq 5, you've got an Ioniq 6, you've got a Kia something or other. I agree, Jay.
And I would just like to throw in at this point that this is a Wall Street Journal thing. Maybe it's no big deal. Maybe it is a big deal. But it looked like the Rivian loss had widened significantly. What's
yes,
with that?
That has widened. Lucid is having trouble with production. There are definitely some production issues going on with Rivian, Lucid, and maybe some others, startups in some of the more exotic electric car lines. It's more than chips. They're having parts issues, assembly issues, all that. These companies don't need these kinds of startup issues or cost issues as they're trying to get volume up to where they can start seeing that they're going to be making more profit than they're spending getting the cars launched and into owners' hands. Anyway, that's going on in those particular lines. And the Rivian's a neat vehicle. We have seen a couple, if not more, around our northwest corner, and I've seen them down in Fairfield County. I think I finally saw the. I don't know what I saw the big SUV. Maybe it's not on the road yet, but I've seen they've all been pickups in the Rivian line that I've seen. I have yet to see a Lucid around. What's the, Jay, have you seen one?
I have not seen a Lucid. I have seen the Rivian truck. I have not seen the SUV. I don't think the SUV is out. I'm not 100% sure.
I don't think it is either. I think they're trying to get ready to bring it online into the production so they'll get it into public's hands. But they've got a lot of orders for both the Rivian and the Lucid vehicles. So the outlook is promising. Whether they can get it up to speed enough to before something else happens that might stop the production of them completely, and I don't think that's going to happen in these two cases. It just takes me back to when I bought a Bricklin back in 1974, and they stopped production at around 2,600 vehicles in the 1975 model year after they couldn't get the wrinkles out of quality control issues affecting paint colors, fitment of panels in weather that was not above 50 degrees or maybe even 40 degrees or 30 degrees year-round, as what happened to my vehicle. They couldn't fix the issues, and they stopped production and went bankrupt.
I think between Rivian and Lucid Air, I believe more in Rivian only because their offerings better match the what the public wants. I mean, these are both a pickup truck and a large SUV, and we know that we're just in this country very hungry for that type of vehicle. The reviews have been great. Yes, they're losing money on every vehicle they're producing, which is a problem. But I know they're trying to fix that, and you know they're cutting costs as much as they can. And I also just think that the fact that Amazon is number one customer and if not the largest investor, one of the largest investors, I think that eventually that company will prevail. But that's just my hunch.
There's certainly enough financial strength behind Rivian to hopefully have it survive until it really gets all the wrinkles out of the early production qualms that they're going through. Lucid, I'm not sure so much how strong the financial investment strength is behind that company.
Speaking of electric vehicles and reasons to purchase one, we know that the tax credit package for electric vehicles did make its way in the Inflation Reduction Act, and that will be signed, I guess, sometime in the very foreseeable future. I read through it a little bit this morning.
It's complicated.
It is a little bit complicated. There are tax credits available there, or there will be, for both new cars and used cars. And again, if you're in the market for an electric vehicle in the next few months, you know, do your homework. It's certainly worth looking into, and we'll just leave it at that.
I think they removed the $200,000 or $250,000 limit in this new bill. Is that correct, Jay?
The number of vehicles, yes.
But the wrinkle that I saw in it was the problem of whether they were going to require battery production to have a significant content amount of either production in the U.S. or parts in the U.S. or a combination of parts production and the battery production. And they're going to... The percentages are starting out relatively low, but they're going to increase, say, from, let's say, 30 to 50% at outset up to 75 or 80% 5 years down the line or 4 years down the line. So the idea, I guess, is, at least politically, is to try to get manufacturing back into this country along with that to give the maximum amount of credits available to buyers.
Yes.
Jay, am not on board with the need for the requirement of it. They've got limits on if you make more than $150,000 a year, you don't get the credit, and other things like that. So it is a very complicated bill. I too tried to read through it, but I lost interest somewhere along the way in trying to be able to give a completely definitive review of it on a show like this.
Next,
Jay. Jay's got some issues, some subjects, I hope.
Oh, yeah, I have issues, too, yes.
Yeah.
But let's leave it at
that.
And
I do, too, but you should say.
GM Super Cruise, another topic.
Oh, yeah.
Robin likes a lot, self-driving cars. GM's version.
They're expanding their range on roads, right, G?
What's that?
Super Cruise is expanding the miles of roads that their
Correct.
Super Cruise is going
They're
to cover.
Doubling the miles from 200,000 miles to 400,000 miles, and I guess
yep.
for the first time we're going to see undivided highways being part of the roads that are in the data, and you will be able to drive your GM car on a bunch of two-lane roads.
400,000 miles of selected roads.
Yes.
And it's going to increase to make a little bit of humor out of it. I do not know whether our listening corner is going to be included in the sudden increase or the doubling increase to 400,000 miles. I saw some kind of map in something that I read, and it was a small-scale map of the entire country, and I couldn't really read the lineage or the lineage or however they were trying to show the increased number of where the roads were all going to be.
Well,
400,000 miles of roads is not a lot in this country, I don't think.
No, but
I don't know what the total number of mileage roads there is in this country. So
let me jump from one topic to another and just say that, you know, we're not too far from Metro New York and New Jersey, and a lot of people in this corner do travel those roads. And I will say this, if Super Cruise is available on the Garden State Parkway in New Jersey on a Sunday late afternoon, everybody should be using the GM Super Cruise, because it is an absolutely it's just a nightmare to navigate those roads on the late in the weekend. I was
Jay, maybe you could describe what Super Cruise does besides allowing you to have your hands off the steering wheel, which I am not a fan of. Again, you know that. We can argue it out till we both are no longer on the show. I still can't. I have recently had, for quite a while, I had an Audi A4 sedan, which has lane-keeping technology in it. And let me tell you, it is not Super Cruise and never will be. Super Cruise is meant to be a lot more, allow a lot more independent car driving and maneuvering on its own without hands-on steering wheel stuff. But the VW system, or the Audi system I tried, would keep in a lane for three times, and then it would turn off, and a light would come on, the steering wheel would vibrate, and a little message saying, please put your hands back on the wheel. And I trusted it, sort of. But sometimes on certain of the roads around here, which were not recently relined, and I noticed lots of roads have been recently relined, probably to help these systems work more reliably. It was unnerving to have the system have to cut off after three attempts at keeping you between the center line of the road and the outside line of the road. And usually it was at the outside line on the lane you were in, the direction you were going, is where it cut off. But it wouldn't have mattered if it cut off on the middle line or not. If you didn't put your hands on the wheel, the car would not regain a center line, you know, a location on its own. It was going to go right across the lines it was designed to keep you within.
I think those self-driving features with the technology out there today, which is getting better every day, I think
it's
still best or most useful in slow speed traffic, you know, high traffic conditions. If you're crawling or moving at 30, 40 miles an hour on some of the highways, like around New York City, during traffic peak hours, I think yes, they're useful, and it does offer a comfort level, and it's quite relaxing. But I'll agree with you at normal speeds, or you know, when you're driving on the open road, I still like to hold the wheel.
Yeah, the speeds I was going at in this sedan were around our state highways in our listing corner, where the speed limits are between 45 and 50 miles an hour posted, and you can safely drive up to 10 miles per hour faster without necessarily being fearful of radar entrapment or pursuit by the police if they're coming the other way and they track you at 50 and a 40 or 60 and a 50. And it is certainly, I agree. At slow speeds, this may be a very useful feature, and maybe it's relaxing. Who knows? I may or may not ever have a car with Super Cruise to ever find that out. It is definitely an advance, and being hyped is a very good technological feature on it. And they're going to be, you know, GM is way ahead, I think, with this Super Cruise feature on their vehicles of everybody but Tesla.
Yes.
Tesla sort of has a Super Cruise. You know, Tesla doesn't have Super Cruise. And again, Jay, you may be able to clarify it for anybody listening intently to this particular part of our show, is what does Super Cruise totally allow you to do if you're using 100% of it?
I'm not 100%.
Besides hands-off, is it complete hands-off without fear of having to put your hands back on? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think all of the systems you still have to put your hands on once in a while. But we'll have to revisit this. I want to jump in on new vehicles and inventory.
Good.
Inventory is still very low, but it seems like there is about 1 million new cars out there for grabs, and that is a 37-day inventory, which is a little bit more than it was a month ago and certainly more than it was a year ago. So things are trending in the right direction. I don't know how that's affecting vehicle prices. I think they're still way up there. There is still a lot of speculation on special new vehicles. Interestingly, I was following a Ford F-150 Lightning pickup truck that just sold on Bring a Trailer on this online auction site, and it sold yesterday for $115,000. So it's probably about $15,000 over the cost of the vehicle new. So somebody flipped it and made $10,000 or $15,000, maybe less. And we know that Ford and GM are restricting the warranties on
resales
on certain.
Is Ford on board with that too, Jay? I hadn't heard.
Oh, yeah.
I hadn't said,
is on
seen
board
anything
with that
about
too.
Ford.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
And I honestly don't know what the delivery times are for a Ford Lightning, but it's a hot vehicle, and there are a few.
Well, they've already put a price increase in the Lightning for 2023 model year.
Yeah,
a significant amount of money.
They've decided to gouge right from the top.
Right from the bottom, maybe.
Yeah.
So, anyways, the prices are going up for these new cars for the next model year. And anybody who's got an order in before this price increase may or may not still be able to get their vehicle at when it ever is produced at the price that they thought they locked it in at. In any event, flipping is going to continue in this business. The manufacturers will try to figure out a way to control it. I read a little bit, Jay, after your last comment about the GM's attempts at discouraging early flipping of vehicles. I tried to figure out whether that was really a big deal, limiting warranty servicing on these cars. You keep telling me that electric vehicles don't need a lot of service, and that's probably true. I agree with that because you don't have engines to change oil on and spark plugs and all those kinds of things that wear out in engines or go things that can go wrong. I recently had my Audi A5 convertible went in for a wiring surgery because destroyed by mice over the winter, and it was an $800 bill. The wiring harness I think cost $300 or $400, and the labor to find it and get it all done cost $300. We don't have that with electric cars, I don't think, in terms of at least because they don't have engines and they don't have wiring harnesses like the fossil fuel cars have.
You also have that's it's an interesting equivalency. Let's get to safety tips. It's 4 minutes in, and if no one has one, I can start. Go on.
Safety tips. Well, I wanted to just talk about safety. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety has just come out with new criteria for side impact vehicle testing.
Yes.
And what they've done is the side, the object impacting the side of the vehicle in the test is designed to mimic that of a larger vehicle.
T-bone crash.
The T-bone crash, exactly. And they just went from a standard that had been used for, I think, about 20 years, which was a 3,300-pound mass, and they've increased that to over 4,000 pounds, and they've also increased the speed from, I think, 31 to 37 miles per hour. And what they found out is a bunch of vehicles, a number of vehicles are now not necessarily failing the test, but not doing all that great on it. And I think the first report they came out with, or the most recent one, was on sedans, and they compared a number of sedans.
There are only two that passed, I think, with flying colors.
The Subaru Outback, which actually is not a sedan, is a wagon, but did quite well. Others, not so well. And you know, manufacturers will obviously in the foreseeable future will start taking these criteria under consideration when they, you know,
Jay,
their design.
I have a big question which I was going to write into, and I don't think I was able to send it because I wasn't technologically up to speed on how to get it out. Oh, I had to put in a password and my name. I want to know how many or what percentage of total impact crashes are likely to be just that particular kind of crash. I was trying to figure out how you got a car to run into a car at a 90-degree angle in the middle of an intersection with somebody trying to go through a traffic light that had turned red and got nailed or was stuck on a railroad track and got nailed. I think those are the only two areas where they'd likely to be happening, and I don't think it happens enough, but they're going to make these vehicles stronger for what? 10% of total accidents?
I think it happens a lot.
You must have a comment about this.
Yeah, my comment is if you're going through an intersection, just keep your eyes peeled, and your likelihood of getting a T-bone will go down sharply. But in the event you do get, impact from the side, I think this will be good. I remember in the 90s, back in Europe, they had come out, it's laughable now, with these little reinforced tubes that were added in the doors, and all the manufacturers were very proud of that. And it's just so lame compared to what the cars can sustain now as far as side impacts.
The second half of my previous comment is, how many times are people likely to be in the back seat? Now, that's sort of rude because obviously families of more than two people are going to have the back seat filled all the time. But I still think that, and that's not to say that if they figure that they have to upgrade their safety feature, it shouldn't be done. But I think the percentage has got to be very low of the total number of crashes of vehicles. Obviously, the angles, front end, front to rear, rear to front are far more.
Well, I'll leave it at this. In safety, and I've been involved with safety for a while on racetracks, for instance, to me it's not what the risk is in percentage of risk. It's what are the consequences if it does happen.
Right.
So,
well, the other thing about this, too, is already I find a lot of front doors are much heavier in their weight feel when you close and open them than the rear doors are of several lines of vehicles. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but I'm just wondering how.
Usually they're longer, so.
Well, they are longer.
But even so, the thoughtful, and we're going to run out of time, so this is definitely a to be continued. But when you get if you're sticking your family in the back seat and it's more tin canny than the front, I don't know that you are going to be totally comfortable.
Well, this will change if the manufacturers have to bolster their side impact strengths, which would include the doors, no doubt, along with the pillars and whatever else they have to do to get a acceptable rating in this new upgraded crash test.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.